This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, thanks for being with us. We are going to talk about the Diamondbacks quite a bit with Pedro Gomez coming up here at 10:20. ESPN baseball insider analyst and Valley resident Pedro Gomez. Story today that the Republic has put out about the inadequacies of Chase Field, leaking of pipes, so on and so forth, the construction of the stadium. We knew that this was going to start happening as the season progressed. If we go back into March and we heard about the back and forth between the county and the team and even last year, and Derek Hall is at the front of this now leading the organization, and there's some lawyering up that's gone on. The team's not happy with it. Mr. Kendrick is up in Colorado here in the summertime, which I don't begrudge him at all on that. But the Diamondbacks aren't happy with their stadium, and the Diamondback attorneys are talking about the alarm bells going off, and maybe Major League Baseball doesn't want the team to be playing in the facility. Those of you that are upset about this story today, this is business being played out right before our eyes, unfortunately. The team is in a wild card race. The team is in a space where they're fun to watch most nights, unless it's last night. Eric, how long did you stick with the game much at all last night?
I didn't stick with it much, no. I watched a little bit of it. It got to be so bad that I turned it off, and then I went back to it because I wanted to watch Brad Sesmatt's Football AZ, and the game was still going.
Yeah.
And so I turned it off again, and then I caught our show that night. But it's, I mean, we knew that this was coming for the Diamondbacks with the teams that they were going to be playing in the month of, you know, the end of last month and this month. It's not going to be easy. Yes, they should make the playoffs. Yes, they've positioned themselves very well. But there's still 2 months of baseball left to play.
I wanted to watch Daniel Descalzo pitch.
That was relatively entertaining.
That's what you have to do in the games.
Like I didn't actually see him pitch, but I did see on Twitter the Diamondbacks took a picture of him pitching.
Right. I mean, that was the best picture. That I mean, if you missed the game last night, you didn't miss anything. They got drilled 16-4. They gave up 17 hits. John Lester hit a home run. They were down 8-1 after three. Patrick Corbin wasn't good there. Here's the thing on all this, though. So the team, the Brewers won again last night. The Rockies won again last night. So the gap is shrinking. And the Cubs are going to win that division, so it's really going to come down to, can the Diamondbacks fend off Milwaukee, maybe St. Louis, and Colorado for the wild card to get into the postseason? They can't possibly gag away a season like this. Zach Godley will go tonight. Bigger overriding story, though, is what this report today that AZ Central had, and we partner with the Arizona Republic with AZ Central Sports. Those of you watching over on AZ Central, thanks for checking us out. We're here every day. We do our thing live at 10 a.m., and you guys consume it all day, all night. It's really fascinating. The people consume this at 8 o'clock in the evening on a treadmill and so on and so forth. But in the last month, I've watched games at Chase Field, and you've been, Eric, have you been to games at the ballpark in the last month?
I have.
The field looks like it's being neglected.
It looked like we went to a Saturday game about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and it looked like they had a monster truck pull on that field probably 48 to 72 hours before the game.
Okay.
I mean, there are patches
along the
baselines that it's dirt, not grass, and the outfield looked like there was a horse race on it. And I was, you know, they have the climate control. And they have the roof open during the day to let the, you know, let the grass grow. And I'm just wondering, like, why does the field look like this?
Okay, so is this any coincidence? Is it all tied together? Is it just happenstance that pictures of pipes bursting with water everywhere makes its way over to the Arizona Republic? Is it any coincidence that the field, when you look at the field, that the field has been not in great shape? Is this the Diamondbacks' way of, I don't know, trying to point out all the warts and the pimples, because that's the only way they're going to get the fans to understand? And at the end of the day, the fans will not understand in big numbers. Is it going to be a PR campaign? Is this starting to become a PR campaign? And some of you guys over the Diamondbacks that watch this show, you're not going to be happy about this, but you have to look at it on both sides. You know, I'm not on your payroll, but I am a fan, and I've been a fan. I've done more for this team behind the scenes and on the air through the years than most anybody else in town from a media standpoint. So I care, but this stuff just pops up at a point in time in the season. It's not going to pop up when the season is over. It's not going to be nearly as impactful. And this story has been pushed to the sideline while the team has had a very good first 3 months, 4 months of the season. But now you've got to do the dirty side, the business side of it. The trade deadline is behind them. Is it any surprise that once the trade deadline was behind them, that this story gets leaked, pardon the pun, gets leaked out? So I'm looking at this just kind of like, okay, is this how it's really going to be? We're going to have things being played out on the news side that's going to take away from the on-the-field side because the team has no choice because the county is so dug in their space and the team is dug in their space. So now you have an attorney for the team that is intimating that MLB may say, well, we can't keep the team playing in this facility. We have to get them out. And, you know, the silence that is coming so far, from what I've seen, the president of the team has yet to go do the media circle, and Derek knows how to do the media circle, unlike anybody else. Ken is sitting up there in Colorado. He doesn't need to do the media circle. That's why he pays Derek big bucks to go do this. Derek this year has not been nearly as out front as he's been in years past. I don't think it's any coincidence. It's been Hazen doing the baseball side of things, and, you know, Derek will go do some shows and that, and it's fine. I'm not banging on Derek. It's just things have changed. It's no longer him being out in front of everything. So with the stadium issue with the Diamondbacks now being brought back up to life, fans are going to go to the game and they're going to say, well, this is a great stadium. Well, no, look at how bad the field looks. Like fans, how many fans really get into the diamond level suites and check it out? Not many. Not many. And those are the big cigars that are just used to having a preferred parking spot and used to having a carameled apple tray come around and give you nice carameled apples and all that with M&Ms on them and all those cool things. But most people that go to the games don't get to experience that side of it. All they know is batting fourth is Paul Goldschmidt. Batting fifth is J.D. Martinez. That's all they really care about. It's C.O. bobblehead night. Oh, wait, C.O. broke his hand. He's gone for the year. They don't care about whether it is leaking or not. Does the roof open? Does the roof close? And yet, the people that I've talked to that are in the whole design of big, I've got some people in my family circle now that are in the space of designing big projects. When I tell them about the retractable roof and I took them to a game and that the railroad tracks are right next door, they just shake their head and they said, this place isn't going to make it. Whenever a railroad car, a group of cars goes by there, it shakes the building. The weight of the roof, the structure of the roof through all these years, fans don't want to hear this. County doesn't want to hear this. Sauer Fields Mosley was quoted as saying, you know, stuff about the Diamondbacks. And, you know, you're going to have your guys that are going to have the lines drawn on the sand. All I know is I don't have a dog in the fight. But the people that I talk to, they're much smarter than I'll ever be, say, yes, structurally, this is going to be a problem. And how long can they stick through the problem? I'm going to talk with Pedro about that on the other side. Steph Curry is going to try his hand at golf tomorrow, and there's some controversy around that. I don't always look for the controversial story. It's just he's taking a slot from somebody else who really wants to be a golfer. And Steph is trying to do what Tim Tebow's doing with baseball or Conor McGregor's doing with boxing. We'll get into that a little bit later on as well. It's a busy Wednesday, a lot going on around the valley, around the great state. Plenty of content up on our website at sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports, our television show tonight that Eric mentioned on Fox Sports Arizona. We're on before and after the Diamondbacks game against the Cubs, 16 airings a week. Appreciate our partnership with FSAZ. And we're brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. Time now to switch gears over to the Diamondbacks. Pedro Gomez joins us on sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our football show on Fox Sports Arizona tonight. Appreciate our partnerships all the way around. How are you? I've not talked to you in a while. ESPN Baseball Insider Analyst and Valley resident. How are you?
I am well, Brad. I've been away from Ahwatukee quite a bit, but I should be home for the next couple of weeks for most of it at least.
Well, you can't go to the ballpark because the stadium, well, it's just the conditions at Chase Field. Now, you've seen what's gone on out here, right?
I have been following it, yes.
Okay. Oh, so yesterday, the attorney for the team telling to the Republic, if Major League Baseball decides they want to create issues for us, there might not be baseball at all in Arizona. This is strong language saying Major League Baseball, they're very, very concerned. Is Major League Baseball very, very concerned, and is there a chance, in your view, the Diamondbacks could be leaving?
Look, the bottom line is that Major League Baseball has 30 partners, and there are 30 team owners. And the commissioner's office works for those 30 owners. Let's not make any mistake. It's kind of like Roger Goodell.
Yep.
Roger Goodell does not work for the players. He works for those 32 NFL owners. Rob Manfred works for the 30 Major League owners. And at their discretion, he has that job. So, you know, if a team is complaining loud enough, the commissioner's office is going to side with the team at every turn. And that's basically what's going on. It's a game of political
grandstanding.
Grandstanding's a good word. That's a good word for it. And you know, we all go to Chase Field, and while it may not be in the top 10 of major league stadiums in terms of aesthetics, in terms of, you know, everything that you might want out of a stadium, you know, some of that has to do with the fact that it is a large hangar-type stadium, which is what you need here, because you need, it doesn't have to be a hangar necessary, but you need a roof because of the, you know, the weather conditions in Arizona.
Right.
So it's never going to be Fenway Park or PNC Park in Pittsburgh or AT&T in San Francisco or even Dodger Stadium. You know, the most beautiful ballparks are the open-air ones that are outside, and that's what you go to a baseball game for, or at least people used to, is to be outdoors. But we can't have that here. Now, the reality is that, you know, everybody that you've talked to, Brad, I'm sure is in agreement. The D-backs looked at what the Atlanta Braves have done.
Right.
And the Braves have moved up near where their fan base is. They left Turner Field, which was only 20 years old, because that's what they wanted, or 25 years old, whatever it was, since the end of the 96 Olympics when they opened it. And you know, the D-backs want to move over by the 101 and the 202.
Yep.
I don't think it's a big secret.
Nope.
I don't think that's a big secret. They want to be closer to their overall fan base, which is not a dumb idea. You know, you want to be where it's easier for more people to come to games. And we know that attendance has been an issue for the D-backs throughout their history, other than the first few years when, you know, people had time to basically buy their season tickets as though it was a car payment and you had 3 years to pay. Which is why you saw those huge, huge numbers those first couple of years. And one way to try to get a new ballpark, especially in this age of, you know, taxpayers saying absolutely not, is to put public pressure on really your fans, basically. Because a lot of fans are going to say, no, we want the D-backs here at whatever it takes. But then, you know, you're fighting the taxpayer part of it. And that's going to be difficult because we know how difficult it was to get a taxpayer-funded stadium here to start with.
Well, unless
all of a sudden to try to do it again is going to be really tough.
Well, but the land that they are looking at the 101 and 202 is on the reservation. So you have to look at the tribe being involved in this and what they are able to do. Right. I mean, that's where this is going to go. You're dead flat right. Their numbers Monday through Thursday, I've been told over there for the last few years, are not good. They're not getting people from the Southeast Valley, which is where the population is heading to. People in Glendale may throw their arms up in the air. It's fact. Right. I do think the timing of all of this is not a coincidence. Okay, we get through the trade deadline. We've had everything in place.
They're winning.
We're winning trade deadline. I haven't seen Derek nearly as visible as he's been in the past because Ken has thrown this on Derek now, in my view. You got to go handle this stadium thing. And when they first brought it up, Derek got taken to the wolves a year ago, and I think now he's handled it much better. To say they're very, very concerned, though, from the team and Major League Baseball, what really can be done here in August? Because the county is saying, so what? So what if air conditioning's leak? You guys are grandstanding. What really can be done here right now about this, Pedro?
It's you know, the timing, you're right, because if the club was having the same type of season it'd been having for the last 5 years or so, with right now, you know, they were 20 games out of first place, I think fans would say go.
Yeah, just leave. I agree.
But you know, the team is playing really, really good baseball. And that has a lot to do with why the pressure is kind of being, you know, applied right now. It's kind of like, and you know, you and I have been here long enough to know that when the Cardinals were still over playing in Tempe at Sun Devil Stadium, what happened when Jake Plummer won that game 16-15 in miraculous fashion, and the vote was 2 days later on a
right.
Tuesday or Thursday, whatever it was.
Yep.
3 days later. And all of a sudden it passed, and boom, there's University of Phoenix Stadium, you know, standing there now. So you've got to try correctly. And I think the D-backs are timing it with the fact that they're winning. If they were losing, I doubt very much that any of this would be made public right now. But they're trying to, you know, use every bullet available in the chamber right now. And the fact that they're winning and playing such good baseball adds to what is going on, but them falling apart.
Well,
I've seen stadiums that have been falling apart. You know, the old Shea Stadium.
Sure.
That was falling apart.
Sure.
To a degree, is falling apart. But again, getting a tax stadium these days is next to impossible, which is why you see so many private stadiums now. They're not built with public money for the most part, and that's going to be really difficult, especially in an area like Phoenix, where we don't have a lot of corporations based. If you've got a place like the Bay Area, which is flooded with, you know,
startups and cash and different companies.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
Sure.
You know, the dot com industry and
yep.
all of that. Well, you can get corporate partnership to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But Phoenix is kind of like New Orleans in the sense that there's not that many huge corporations based out of Phoenix. And that's part of the problem with trying to get private money to help you build a stadium. And, you know, that's why you need publicly financed money, public money to finance a stadium in places that don't have huge corporation bases. And that's going to be an issue. That's going to be one of the bigger obstacles that maybe a lot of people don't talk about or think about. But that does play a role.
All right, talking with Pedro Gomez. I don't want to spend the whole segment on this, but so Rob Manfred has brought up his dissatisfaction with Phoenix. I think he did it last time during spring
training.
Again,
he's playing, you know, that's one of his 30 partners.
Right. And so what are the options here, right? So the team isn't just going to show up in September and say, well, we're out of here. We're going to Monterrey, Mexico for the next 5 years while we get it figured out. Or we're going to go to some city. We're going to go to Las Vegas, which I can't discount Las Vegas for any team now. I guess.
Oh, I think I can discount it right now.
Can you?
You can't oversaturate that market. You've got the NFL coming in a couple of years.
Well,
you've got the NHL coming this year. You that is not as big a city to be able to put up or to support a team that plays 81 home games there. I don't think Las Vegas is a viable
Okay,
option.
But is there any...
I know what you're saying.
Is there any city, though, that's viable? How does this
no.
play out in your view? You know,
Charlotte is going to be... Look, Charlotte will probably be there. Las Vegas will be thrown out there. But the reality is that when the Expos moved to Washington, D.C., that kind of took away the last possible city that teams could use as leverage. And let's not forget that before the Expos went there, other teams used to use D.C. as leverage, as,
That's
hey,
true.
If you don't help us, we're going to move.
Montreal should be considered again, though, Pedro. A team going back to Montreal.
Yeah, to a degree.
Yes.
Probably so. I just don't think it's realistic.
Yeah.
But it will be used. It probably will be used. Tampa Bay used to be used before the Rays got there. And remember, the Giants and the White Sox were both going to move there.
That's right.
At one point. And, you know, and Major League Baseball said, no, that's not going to happen. But you know, it's leverage. It's all about leverage. and who can we use as leverage to try to get what we want? And that's basically what's going on. But this is not anything new, by the way. This has been going on since the beginning of sports leagues being formed, basically.
But here in the Valley, I mean, people are, today at least, all I'm getting is the team leaving, which I think that there was a lot of grandstanding yesterday. All right, I want to move off of that, though. The team is
in Seattle Supersonics, by the way, another team.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
16-4 yesterday. It is one game. Daniel Descalzo is really not a good pitcher, I guess. But I'm looking at them saying, boy, they're not in a free fall, but they certainly aren't nearly as crisp as what they appear to be. Do you think they hold off Milwaukee, Colorado, St. Louis for at least one of the two wild card slots?
I do. And I think one of the biggest reasons is that the starting pitching, even though yesterday is not indicative, the starting pitching has been pretty good. You know, they're in the top five in ERA for starting pitching. Mike Butcher, the pitching coach, I think has done a phenomenal job with this team, considering where it's been the last few years. And I think they have the goods, especially lineup-wise, to be able to hang on and reach the postseason. And, you know, from that point, look, it's one game.
Right.
And if it is them and the Rockies, you know, if they can line it up where Zach Greinke is pitching that one game and it's here somehow, I like their chances. Even if it was in Denver, I like their chances. It's not like the Rockies have a Chris Sale sitting there. Like, if you look at the Red Sox in the other league, and if somehow the Yankees win that division, but the Red Sox are in a one-card wild-card game, whoever it's against, if Chris Sale's on the mound, I like the Red Sox chances in a one-game playoff. Same goes for the D-backs if Zach Greinke can be lined up. But now look, if they need Zach Greinke to win on the last day of the season in order to reach the playoffs, that's what's going to happen. And now all of a sudden, you know, it's a little bit of a drop-off and anything can happen. But if Zach Greinke is pitching your one-game wild card, I think the D-backs can win that game.
Yeah, that's why.
And I do think that they have the goods to hang on and reach the postseason.
And that's why the Robbie Ray injury to me is so big. Like, okay, he gets drilled in the head, and when people say, well, he's going to come back and he's going to be just fine, you know better than I do on that. You've covered that through the years. It's not 100%, oh, yeah, he's just fine. It's not.
No, it's not. And even if he is physically fine, mentally, it's really difficult because, you know, that's the part where pitchers say, look, my stuff is the same. But you're now in the back of your mind, you're always thinking about, Jesus, is going to come right back at me again.
Right.
And that's the part where, you know, little things are off. So, no, it is not even remotely close to being the same. You could get there, but it's not right out of the gate.
See you. Stay well. Appreciate it as always. Thanks.
All right, Brad. Take care.
You got it. There's Pedro Gomez with us. Always good to catch up with Pedro. ESPN Baseball Insider, analyst, Valley resident, Pedro Gomez. We have Talk to the Lopes coming up today at 11, weekly segment that we did a few years back, and we're bringing it back. Looking forward to that. There'll be Talk to the Lopes. That comes up at 11 o'clock. Tim Nolan will be with us today, the GCU head women's volleyball coach, every Wednesday. Talk to the Lopes at 11, part of what we do here at Sports360AZ.com. On the other side, so the Cardinals are heading to Canton. Some NFL news and notes I want to get to. Steph Curry is in the news cycle today. And I don't know where you're at on this one. I think it's a bunch of to do about nothing in the middle or early week, midweek of the first week of August. It's a pretty dead week in sports. I'm going to run this by you. You may see it differently than I. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmad. So part of the attraction of this weekend with the NFL Hall of Fame game and just the Hall of Fame ceremonies in general, is it's not just Kurt Warner. And Kurt is going to speak last on Saturday night. So, like, Saturday night, I've got to find my way somewhere to see it live. I know we're in a day and age where I can see clips later on Twitter. People will send me links and say, what do you think? And we'll talk about it on the show on Monday. But I want to see it in real time because Brenda Warner is the one that is introducing Kurt. And that's a different spin. I can't remember, and if it's been the last few years, just it's on me. I don't remember wives introducing husbands. And it may have happened as last year. I don't know. I don't know this. But knowing the Warner family in terms of covering them, like when I was over doing the TV side, I went to their house and I did the at-home deal, and it was fine. It was, I've done dozens and dozens of at-homes, and the news directors get all excited and producers get all excited because you get to see them in their kitchen and you get to see what's in their refrigerator and you get to see them in the backyard, the trampoline. And I think is like, guess what? The house is always clean. I don't know about you guys, but everything's just immaculate. Everything is just perfect. Everything is just this. I don't mean this towards the Warners. It's just whenever I do at-home pieces, I've never gone to a place that's a dump and a dive, or people that are on tough times, or houses that aren't in great shape. So, you know, do you really get the true feel of what it's like, or is it just nothing more than acting? I didn't feel that way when I went to the Warners. It was great. It was great. You know, Kurt showed me around, was very gracious. It was like 4 hours of invading their privacy to show their side of it and to sit with the two of them. And I've always enjoyed my dealings with the family, and they are dealings. When you ask them to go do a story, you are trying to work through the negotiation of can you come on or not. I've sat with Kurt at club basketball games because we're in that space. Both of us are. Through the last couple of years, we've been at places like the Salvation Army gym over on the south side of Phoenix, out in Avondale. Been out there with Dan Marley, too, because all of our kids are doing the club basketball scene. And you see the competitive side of Kurt Warner. You really see the and Brenda, too. It's kind of funny. So I'm actually a little more interested in to hear what Brenda has to say on Saturday night, because I'm pretty sure Kurt is going to just handle everything in his way, in a very classy, straightforward. Not that anybody goes after someone in speeches, and Kurt's not the type of person that's going to go after somebody. But I'm curious how he's going to start his story and his narrative. If he's going to go to the Hy-Vee and stacking tomatoes to the Arena League, to Green Bay, to St. Louis, to New York, to Arizona. You know, when you're designing a speech, are you going to go from front to back, right? And or are you going to go from back to front? Are you going to leave anything out through the years? Is he going to make an acknowledgement of what happened in New York? When I've had Kurt on this show, and I've referred to that time as he was on the scrap heap, he doesn't take it very kindly. Not many athletes do. Peter King, when he's with us, referred to it as a donut hole. That's the only way you can put Kurt's time in New York was a donut hole. So how is Kurt going to handle that side of his career? Kurt's very sharp, very smart businessman. He's not going to just ignore New York entirely. There's business there to be had. So he's got to acknowledge his time in New York. Am I making sense on this, Eric, because you're going through a speech?
Yeah, and I'm also looking forward to seeing exactly. He knows what he's going to say. No one else really knows what he's going to say. And there's so many different avenues where he could start and end the speech because his story is so unique.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Right. Right,
I mean, rags to riches is an overused term, but
sure.
Kurt Warner is the epitome of rags to riches.
But is he going to, if he mentions great receivers?
Which he will. He's going to mention so many people and try as hard as he can not to talk about himself, because that's how Kurt Warner is.
So is he going to go down the line of Isaac Bruce we've had on the show,
yep.
Larry Fitzgerald we've had on the show? Okay, I got that. Is he going to go to Torrey Holt and Anquan Boldin?
Definitely.
You would think he would have to. Of course he would, right? Is he going to go through his coaches that he worked with and were hard on him?
Mike Martz,
right? If you think about his time here with the Cardinals and Sean Payton,
Ken Whisenhunt?
Yeah, Ken Whisenhunt, sure. Why did I say Sean Payton? So you're going to go through his position coaches. Is he going to go through each and every one of them? Where after a while becomes like, okay, we got it. Sometimes these speeches turn into got it, understood, check box, end of day.
I don't think it's going to be like that because Kurt is so encapturing when he speaks.
Right.
I mean, you want to hear what he's going to say, and he's going to have one of these speeches that probably lasts, I don't know, they have a limit on how long they're supposed to talk, but if it's 15, 20 minutes, he'll be done, and you'll be like, wow, he only spoke for 3 or 4 minutes.
Todd Haley.
Oh, wait.
I blanked on Todd Haley. Yeah,
yes.
I blanked on
Todd
Haley.
Haley.
So, is he going to talk about his faith?
Yes.
And will that drive some people away?
Sure.
Faith always does. I myself like it when someone talks about themselves as a whole person and their faith. I like it when someone talks about their failures, It's real easy to talk about the Super Bowl drive and the throw to Isaac Bruce. That's easy. Not easy when we had Mike Martz on. He said, yeah, we threw him out of drills intentionally. Didn't think he could play.
Great story. Great anecdote.
Right. I mean,
it was the center's fault. We blame Kurt just to see how he'd react.
Just see how he'd react. Sure. So, you know, there is the side of when did you feel like you were going to quit? Okay. I remember being in St. Louis when he was with the Cardinals and he got the concussion. And Brenda, I was back at the team hotel, and Brenda and the family were in the lobby, and they were really concerned about Kurt. And that was about the end of Kurt. I mean, we knew that, if you remember that game, it was a game in St. Louis. Cardinals got run over, and Kurt got banged up in that game. And, you know, when did he know? And then he was in that space for a couple of years of, I might want to come back and play. I might want to come back and play. I think Fitz is going to be in that same space.
Probably. Probably. And getting back to Kurt's faith, the thing that is that I've heard when talking to players and people that know Kurt really well is Kurt talks about his faith with his teammates, but he doesn't push his faith onto teammates. There's a big difference. He's respectful as to what he says, when he says, and how he talks about his religion and his beliefs.
And I've been with him at spaces where he has talked about his religion. I've been at churches where he has spoke. I think that to sit and do interviews with people and you know that they're going to be out talking about their faith, I make the appointment to try to get to that place. I was at a space where Ron Wolfley talked about his faith and his journey, and you and I have worked with Ron, and we know the stuff that he went through was just awful. And this was like it was like 8 months ago, and there were grown men just sobbing their eyes out saying, I've been right there, brother. I've been right there. I think that there is that. Where you have a teammate that will, when Aeneas Williams was with the Cardinals, Aeneas Williams was the same way from what I heard. Aeneas Williams was not jamming it down people's throats, around teammates' throats. Faith is something that's very personal. Fans get mad when guys bring it up. I don't have a problem with it. You know Kurt's going to do that. Kurt's going to bring up his faith, and I think that's cool, and he should bring it up. And I'm going to sit there and probably parse every word. I'm probably going to sit there with every story and every antidote and say, well, that was kind of cool. I didn't know that there was this guy with the Iowa Barnstormers that said, you've got to do this or you've got to do that. You know, and if there are names that are left out, people will immediately say, ooh, he didn't mention so-and-so in his Hall of Fame speech. Ooh, it's really bad. So many names. So I don't get too wound up about that. The game itself tomorrow night. So Trevor Knight's going to get some quarterback time tomorrow night. Am I interested and excited to see how Trevor Knight performs at quarterback? I guess. It's a nice story. He's going to be on the Football AZ show next week. Jordy's working on a good piece on him. But that's not why you should be watching football, in my opinion. You should be seeing these guys, the starters, go out and get some reps. Not one starter's playing tomorrow night. Not one. And you know what? I'm fine with that. It just shows what a complete mockery and joke it is to play these games. It just, because there'll be people that'll pay their money and they'll have their jerseys on tomorrow night, and they're just happy to be in the stadium with a bunch of guys who won't even be on the team. And someday when this concussion thing really goes much, much further, they'll look back on these preseason games and those Thursday night games and say, yeah, you know, the league at one time said they really care, and they were doing things like this. Doesn't make any sense at all. Doesn't make a lick of sense. Steph Curry on the other side, plus a former Arizona high school star player. We have a piece of video that is going to grind Wildcat and Sun Devil fans because this guy got away and he's already putting on a show. That's next. Right, a couple other things before we get through this segment, and we'll have a Talk to the Lopes coming up here at 11 o'clock. Second season, Tim Nolan, GCU head women's volleyball coach, weekly Talk to the Lopes. We do that. It's part of sports360az.com, things around the valley. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, and, of course, our football show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona with 16 airings. We are in the communications business, and Eric and I saw a play last night by Austin Jackson, the football player over at USC, on social media. It was really impressive to see Austin Jackson out there. And Austin Jackson was considered to be one of the top offensive linemen, one of the top prospects in our state. And he goes to USC. Eric said, hey, did you see the Austin Jackson catch? And I said, well, of course I did. And then during the break, it's like, I think we're thinking two different things here. This is the communication business, right? So I screwed this one up, right?
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine because I'm going to play the Austin Jackson catch here that everyone is talking about.
Not the one that I saw on social media with him at USC.
No, this was all over social media, but this is a different
one. I did
one.
See so that headline.
Is,
so.
This is last night right. at Fenway Park, so
all
check
right,
this out.
See. All right, let's see this. And then he's going to dive in.
I mean, there are good catches, and then there are catches like that that's going to win an ESPY and an Emmy. And I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
It's just a ridiculous. It's just.
Wow.
I mean, I know that little half fence out there in Fenway by the bullpen is not super tall, but it's incredible to see something like this because it's something that's going to be shown for years and years and years. It's just an unbelievable play.
Well, my Austin Jackson was not as good as your Austin Jackson. So how's that? Figure that one out. Steph Curry's in the news cycle today. And one last thing on baseball before I get over to Steph. This is a big start for Zach Godley. Zach Godley pitched well at St. Louis the other day. Zach Godley, of course, if you're talking about Diamondback starting rotation, you're talking about your fourth, fifth starter. And with Robbie Ray's injury down and taking the line drive off his head, and you've already gone through Greinke, you got to get something out of Zach Godley. And as bad as they were last night, I mean, they were just awful, awful last night. You can't go down two in a row to the Cubs, can you? And you're facing Arrieta, and Arrieta has not been the Arrieta of 2016. So tonight I'm going to be watching and see how Zach Godley does. That is tonight. Now over to Steph Curry. I have no problem with guys in their off season trying out other sports. In fact, we sit here and encourage our kids to go try multiple sports and not be specialists at one. We do that. I think it's cool when guys that are at the top of their profession go do other things. We know Steph Curry is really, really good, one of the best on the basketball court. We got it. Steph Curry, though, is very good at golf. And so tomorrow, Steph Curry is actually going to go and compete in the web.com tour. That's the tour that is below the PGA, the one step below. Now, he's already played in the deal up at Lake Tahoe when he finished fourth. He reportedly has a handicap between two and scratch. Here's the part where Steph Curry is taking some heat, and tell me where you're at on this one. My view is it's not a big deal. So he's been given a sponsor exemption. And that means that he is taking the slot of somebody who has been on the web.com every week, a slot that somebody could have had, not like one person, but there's a whole gaggle of people that could have had that exemption. Instead, they give it to Steph Curry, so he's going to take a slot away from somebody who wants to be a golfer full time, rather than let Steph go out and do his thing. If I'm on the web.com tour, sorry to say, I have to take Steph Curry all day long because guys like Sesmat sitting in a studio in Scottsdale are talking about it when they would never talk about the web.com tour if the guy who got the exemption is allowed to play. The web.com will get more attention from Steph Curry highlights trying to hit out of the sand or the rough or a birdie putt tomorrow. It's kind of like what Tim Tebow's doing. I have no problem with what Tim Tebow's doing. I heard that, well, it makes minor league baseball a joke. He's actually producing. You know, Conor McGregor, for those of you that are or not into him fighting, he wants to take a shot at boxing. What is wrong with that? I don't see any problem here. On the other side, we switch gears. Talk to the Lopes is next, as we do every Wednesday. Talk to the Lopes, Grand Canyon University. On the other side, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sesmat. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every Wednesday, we do Talk to the Lopes. Grand Canyon University getting ready to get going on another year of sports, a year in which they are now eligible to go into postseason play, which I think across the board is terrific news. And all their sports, north of 20 sports they have on campus, just growing by leaps and bounds. So very excited to have a partnership with GCU. Our first guest on Talk to the Lopes. There's no pressure now on Tim Nolan with that buildup. GCU head women's volleyball coach came over here from USC. He's in year number two, getting the job done. Coach, it's Brad Sesmat. How are you?
I'm good, Brad. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Excited for your season because I look at your roster and, man, it's all over the place. You've got a lot of size. You've got a lot to look forward to on the court. But let's start off the court. Team GPA was really good last year. The momentum from year one to year two. Just talk about that, Tim, in general terms.
Yeah, well, you know, we're real excited. All right. We had a 3.71 on the year as a team. We had the highest team GPA at Grand Canyon for all the sports. We were awarded the ABCA Team Academic All-American Award. So really excited about their accomplishments there, and hoping to parlay that success into some, you know, success on the court this fall. We get a lot of returners coming back healthy, and then we bring in a great group of young, talented athletes to kind of supplement our returners.
All right, so when you do get the best GPA on campus, do the girls let everybody else have it? I have to know. Do they kind of?
Oh, yeah. They are very proud of it, and they should be. You know,
yes,
it's not
yes.
easy to get a 3.71. I never had a 3.71.
No, I didn't even come close. I might have got half of that, but it's something where you go, up to Mr. Mueller's office and say, this is what we've got done here academically. I mean, I'm sure that up in the fourth floor, they're pretty thrilled about what's going on there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's not just the girls. It's a whole effort here with our, you know, academic department here and the tutors and our athletic coordinators and things like that. And it's just really a team effort, and a lot of people put forth a lot of work to help our girls accomplish that success. But, you know, it's something to be proud of. I think it's something they can always look back and really feel a great sense of accomplishment with.
Talk to the Lopes, Tim Nolan, the GCU head women's volleyball coach. All right, so you come here from USC. What was the attraction then, and how has it worked out for you now coming into year number two?
Sure. You know, Grand Canyon is really a unique and special place. And while I had a great time at USC, and, you know, we had a lot of success there, I was looking for that next step. But I had a couple very specific guidelines. You know, I wanted a place that I felt we could attract top talent. So it had to have location, it had to have facilities, and it had to have an investment in athletics and an administration that understood the value that athletics provide to university. And, you know, GCU kind of hit all those check boxes. I was looked at by a number of universities, but there just wasn't quite the right fit, and I wasn't ready to leave and pick up my family and move. But, you know, when Mike Vaught and his staff reached out, and after they showed me the campus, and, you know, I met with President Mueller, and meeting all the people that support athletics here and their vision of Grand Canyon University athletics and what they wanted to become, I really wanted to be part of it.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to go behind the curtain here a little bit in terms of recruiting, because I think it's important, and I get this asked a lot in all sports. If you've got a daughter who's a club volleyball or has interest in volleyball, how soon, because I've been in the club volleyball circuit here in Arizona with two of my daughters, how early do you have them get into club volleyball, and how important is it to have them in the club circuit versus play for the high school team, or do you like to see them do both?
I like to see them do both. First and foremost, I really respect high school athletics. I was a multi-sport high school athlete. I think multi-sport athletes are more durable when they start to focus on one collegiate sport. In terms of when to start club, I think it's important that they start just before their freshman year. You know, so that seventh, eighth grade year, somewhere in there, those junior high years, that is when the elite kids start to really blossom, and the speed of the game picks up. And you know, Arizona club volleyball is pretty good right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good coaches. There's a lot of good players. And we spend a lot of time, you know, recruiting our backyard. Our philosophy here is we want to own our backyard. We want to get the best kid out of the state of Arizona every single year. So, you know, to all those people out there wanting to know how to get noticed, when to get noticed, get them out there in club early. Have them reach out to coaches early. The squeaky wheel always gets the grease. So have them send emails, have them attend college matches, see what it's like, have them see the speed of the game, the size of the athletes.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really exciting time to be playing, you know, volleyball in Arizona, because it's a great group of talent right now.
Talk with Tim Nolan, GCU head women's volleyball coach. This is Talk to the Lopes. Your first home match is Friday, September 8th against Fordham, but you open the season at Syracuse, you play at Arizona. Your schedule is all over the place. Tell me about scheduling and your philosophy and how to do it against conferences, and what are you looking for?
Sure. I think, you know, we open at Syracuse because we have such a young team in the sense that we have a great group of upperclassmen, but we have five newcomers as a team this year. I wanted to get out and play a big school with a great name and a good program. and get them out on the road and travel early before we start school and kind of get all that, you know, that first travel trip out of the way and get everyone used to our routine. So that's why we took that big trip to Syracuse, or going to take that big trip. And then in terms of Arizona, I want to play Arizona every year. We're trying to set them up to be our in-state rival. We have a great relationship with that coaching staff over there and have kind of agreed to play each other every year. So we're going to go down there and we're going to battle with the Wildcats a little bit. And then we come home to open up here against, you know, we have Fordham, and then we also have Gonzaga and Idaho in our home tournament. So I think scheduling, you got to play the best. You know, Arizona is a Pac-12 team. Obviously, the Pac-12 is, in my opinion, the premier volleyball conference in the country. And I think it's important that we play those teams every year. You know, I like to get out and travel and expose my athletes to different styles of volleyball, which is, you know, why we're going to the East Coast to play Syracuse. Again, a great program, a well-known school. And I think it's someone we can go out there and compete with.
Got about a minute left this segment. I'm wondering, what do you like about your team? What question marks do you have about your team as you get ready to get the year started?
Well, what I like about my team is our enthusiasm. You know, our athletes are really excited about the year. They come up and stop in my office all the time and say, "Hey, Coach, I can't wait for practices to start. When can we get going?" You know, they want to do well, and they want to perform, and they want to please. And, you know, the question marks I have is, you know, how healthy are we going to be? We have some kids coming off some injuries last year, and some of them are all ready to go, and some of them are still finishing out their rehab. And, you know, I think that's the biggest question mark is how healthy they'll get. And then how fast our freshmen will adapt to the speed of the collegiate game. You know, our goal here is we want to be a top 25 team in the country. Mm-hmm. And obviously we have some growth to do to get there, but we have our eye on the prize. We know what it takes to get there.
Well, I appreciate your insight, and again, as a club volleyball dad and seeing what's going on campus, it reads and sounds like everything is heading in the right direction. Good luck this year, and thanks.
Oh, thank you so much for having us. I really appreciate it.
That is Talk to the Lopes. Hey, there you go. Got the Go Lopes in there. Sorry, Coach. Tim Nolan there with us, GCU head women's volleyball coach. That is Talk to the Lopes for this week. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.